Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Do you believe in miracles? Let's go in-depth with Jim Mead, pastor with the New Covenant Church in Knoxville. Jim, I understand you sitting here talking to me is a miracle.
It is. When they first did the surgery, what was communicated to my wife, and then, of course, I heard later, was that because of the extent of the stroke, the pons area of my brain, which is an area vital to certain functions, the cerebellum was dramatically affected, the brainstem was dramatically affected. The doctor who did the surgery told her that surgery is nothing more than an attempt to save his life. It's not going to reverse the impact of the stroke. You'll have to understand that he will probably never walk again, never talk again, never feed himself, never be able to communicate. He can take information in and process it because that part of his brain was not affected, but he does not have the ability to communicate anymore. In essence, they said he'll live the life of an infant. And what Dr. Piper said was, if I was unfortunate enough to live, I'd probably live the life of an invalid. But if Laura wanted him to do the surgery, he would. Otherwise, I would have been, I believe the one doctor said I was within 2 hours of dying.
Now, when was this?
That was December. I had the stroke December 8th, 2008, and they did not do surgery until December 10th, 2008. That was what really exacerbated the circumstance, was that from the initial stroke to the time of surgery was 40 hours. And so the stroke itself probably was not very severe. I really don't know. Because of the time that passed from when I had the stroke till they did the surgery, the swelling inside the brain is what really made the situation terrible. The strokes in the brainstem resulted from the swelling in the brain. And they had told me that normally when someone experiences one stroke in the brainstem from swelling, they might live, but they don't recover. And I had two strokes in the brainstem from swelling. And so they gave me very little hope for survival.
And the swelling was from another stroke?
My artery dissected. That allowed a clot to form, and that went to my brain through the basilar artery, and that cut off the blood flow to one side of my brain. Then because the artery dissected, the blood flow was restricted from the other side of my brain, so I had a double-sided stroke, and that's what caused the entire brain to swell.
And so why did they wait on the surgery? They thought there was no hope, or what?
At first, the CT scan did not show any swelling. They were actually baffled about why, you know, at the time I was 38 years old, why would a 38-year-old guy be lethargic? Why would he have the symptoms I had? They thought at first maybe there was some sort of a intestinal disorder that, you know, caused the irritation. Maybe I had high blood pressure that caused water in my brain. They treated me for hypertensive hydrocephaly. They treated me for, again, like I said, an intestinal disorder. They were literally baffled at why I would be so lethargic, because the CT scan did not show any swelling. Now, my neurologist looked at the same scans and said, but you can see the beginnings of swelling. You really can. You have to really search for it, but it's not obvious. And that's really why they did not do surgery right away.
They didn't really know what was happening.
Right. They didn't know. You know, when a 38-year-old man comes into the hospital, they don't immediately think stroke. They try to find every other solution. And in the meantime, because of the stroke, because of the blood flow being cut off my brain, my brain is beginning to swell, and that's what caused the lethargy, was a swelling in the brain. And when Dr. Benjamin, the neurologist at the VA in Des Moines, finally recognized my stroke, the way she did it, she actually just popped into my room. That's what generated really the title, Living the Life of a Miracle, is that she was not supposed to see me that day. She was walking in the hallway. One of the nurses just said, "Hey, do you want to come and look at this guy? He's not doing too well." And so she just popped into my room, and she opened up my eye, and she said, told my wife that my eyes were literally bouncing all over the place. And her first words were, "Uh-oh." And my wife has said, "You never want to hear a doctor say, 'Uh-oh,' when they look at you." And she told the nurse, "I need to have a CT scan right away." This was 11 o'clock, 11:30. The nurse told the doctor that I was scheduled for an MRI at Mercy Hospital at 3:45. And Dr. Benjamin said, "Well, he'll be dead before 3:45. He needs to go for a CT scan now." And the CT scan revealed severe swelling in the brain. I had what's called a bilateral cerebellar infarction. What the MRI after the surgery revealed, that 75% of my cerebellum was removed because of the strokes. And I had two strokes in my brain stem. Again, as I said, the pons area of my brain was affected. And they did say, "You understand," after the surgery, the nurses said, "You understand, he may never wake up from this." It's hard to tell statistics, but roughly a 50-50 chance of surviving the surgery. If I survived, they gave me less than a 30% chance of actually waking up from the surgery. And then my wife was told that I had basically a 0% chance of having any meaningful recovery. That's not to say I wouldn't live, but I wouldn't have a meaningful recovery.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Jim Mead about his recovery from a stroke. So it sounds like more than one miracle then. Sounds like the doctor walking in,
yes,
and your wife going ahead and saying, "Operate."
Yes. My wife has said that she cannot remember the doctor saying the words, "He will live the rest of his life as an infant." She did not remember him saying he'll never walk, never talk, never feed himself, because in her heart, afterward, she said, "Had I heard that, I would have known you would not have wanted to live that way. And so I would have told him to not do the surgery." But she said, I have no recollection of him saying those words. The people who were in the room with her distinctly remember him saying that. But she said, "I don't have any recollection of him having that conversation with me. Otherwise, I would have opted not to do the surgery." So there were several miracles. One thing I outlined in the book, coincidence, according to Webster's Dictionary, is events that happen that are their lack of connection. And that's when I asked the question, the events in my life, is there really a lack of connection? When you look at several things, and I detail them in the book, but one of the things is there were two trips to the doctor. I took my kids to the doctor, and just for kicks, I had him check my blood pressure. And when I went to change insurance companies, they told me they were going to drop me from insurance, or not drop me, they were going to raise my premium by 25% and waive me from any heart-related conditions because I had chronic high blood pressure, because the doctor had written in my chart that I had borderline high blood pressure. It wasn't anything that alarmed me, but he wrote it in my chart, and so the insurance company was going to waive me from heart-related conditions. So I decided to go the route of the VA, and because of that, my stroke was covered by the VA. Had I kept private insurance, it would have been completely not covered. I'd have had close to $1 million in hospital bills. But because of that, those two events, it was covered by the VA. There are other instances. Within a two-week period, there were two relatively significant events that happened in my life that caused me to seek life insurance. 3 years after that, I had the stroke. I had been rendered uninsurable. Is it a coincidence that those two events happened so close to each other, it caused me to seek out life insurance? There were several other events, and I don't want to take time to delineate them because they're talked about in the book. But there were several things that are just – someone has to explain them to me. If they're not miraculous, then somebody would have to explain them to me. They'd have to explain to me why every doctor – it's not just one or two. Every doctor I've been to has said, in regards to my recovery, we have left the medical and entered the miraculous. There's absolutely no medical explanation for your recovery. One doctor has said that my recovery is not just rare. She said it's never happened before. Not the fact I lived, but the fact that with the severity of the stroke, they were all talking a year to 2 years of intense therapy. I walked out of the hospital after 3 days of physical therapy. And they all said there's just no medical explanation for why you're doing what you're doing. I had a conversation with a doctor 3 months after my stroke, and I told him I'd been out riding my bike and playing basketball and running. And his comment to me was, "You can't." And I said, "Well, whether I can or can't, I was." He said, "You don't understand the coordination it takes to ride a bike, to type, to run, to play basketball. You don't have that coordination anymore because so much of your cerebellum has been removed." And again, my response was, whether I can or can't, I was. And
so the doctors took out some of your cerebellum, or is it just
non-coding? Some of it was dead. And they removed, they suctioned it out because it was dead. Other parts they had to remove because it was, I don't know the best way to describe it. The doctor said there's some that's dead, some that's not functioning. So they removed it because it was not functioning. I don't know all the details of that. But the scans, the MRI scans from after my cerebellum reveal that as much as 70 to 75% of my cerebellum is gone, and there are two strokes visible in my brainstem and three spots of lesions on my brainstem from, I'm assuming, from damage. And everyone I've talked to, one doctor I talked to said, anytime you use the word pontine stroke, when the pons is involved, what this doctor said was, almost in every case, in fact, I believe he said in every case, whenever someone suffers a pontine stroke, it is very devastating, and people don't recover from those. And yet, I did have the pontine stroke, and I do suffer the effects of it. You know, my left eye does, you know, it bounces a little bit just because the brain is getting bad signal from the pons. I get a pulsating sound in one of my ears from the damage to the pons. But the one doctor said, when as much damage as there was to the pons area of the brain, if that's the only side effect you have, that's miraculous.
Now, when you say the word miraculous, you don't mean it in the common dictionary sense of the word. You mean it in a spiritual way.
I mean it in a spiritual way. One of the things I talk about in the book is unfortunately, the word miracle is thrown around very loosely. When someone manages to get through rush hour traffic unscathed, well, that was a miracle that I got through rush hour traffic. They had a hard day. Boy, it was a miracle I survived the day. It was a miracle that you know, when the New York Giants beat the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl in 2008, that was a miracle. And the word miracle is thrown around so loosely that when someone says, I really believe I experienced a miracle from God, people generally think, yeah, whatever. I don't think people really get the fact that sometimes in life miracles do still happen. They hear the word miracle and they think, you know, those are done away with. And my question would be for that person, then how would you classify the things that happened in my life? If the word miracle doesn't fit, how would it be classified? How would someone classify something that is, there's absolutely no medical explanation for it at all? No matter what specialist, stroke specialist I've been to, neurologist I've been to, they all have the same feeling. There is no medical explanation. We've left the medical and entered the miraculous. So I would ask someone, when they say, we don't really believe in miracles anymore, my question would be, then how would you classify my events?
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Jim Mead about his recovery from a stroke. In your book, Living the Life of a Miracle, Finding God's Grace During a Deep Trial, where can people find that?
They can find that at the next chapter in Knoxville. They can get through Branches in Pella. So any bookstore that has access to Ingram has access to that book.
I'm thinking this isn't a fair question, but I have to ask it. From everything you've told me, it appears that you were meant to live, and that had to be for some purpose. Do you
Correct.
Ever wonder what the purpose is, why you lived?
I do. I really do. And I've had the conversation, never openly. I never discussed this with a lot of people. But I often wonder, when I'm tempted to, you know, not do my best, whether it's preaching, pastoring, leading the youth, teaching my kids, whenever I'm tempted to do less than my best, that's my first question. Do I believe that I was intended to live so I could do less than my best? I really don't think so. And that raises another question that is equally hard to answer. In my life, I believe God worked a miracle that caused me to live. What about people who don't experience the same, in their mind, the same grace of God? What about people who experience a tragedy in their life, people who've lost a loved one? What do I say to them? And that's where I go back to my primary teaching from this tragedy, which is God is God and I am not. God can do anything he chooses to do, but he does not have to do anything. And even though circumstances are bleak and they're dark, that does not change God's character. When something tragic happens in our lives, what we have to do then is ask the question, not was this good or bad? Those are fundamentally faulty questions. The question that we have to learn is, what do I do now? I'm powerless to control what happened 5 minutes ago, but I have absolute power to control what I do 5 minutes from now. And so that's the question, is not whether my circumstances are good or bad. Those are fundamentally flawed depending on how you look at them. It's, what do I do with these circumstances? How do I allow those to shape me? Am I going to allow my circumstances to dictate my life, or will I live my life regardless of my circumstances?
and you're going to live your life.
I'm going to live my life. And regardless of what happens to me, I know from one doctor, they said, you know, people who suffer one brain injury are seven times more likely to suffer a second brain injury. I don't know if that was meant to encourage me, but it didn't. So I know that the likelihood of my experiencing a second trauma of some sort drastically increased. And if something happens to me that is tragic in my life, that does not change God's character. What my children, what my wife will have to do in the event that something happens to me is they have to say, where do I go now? Not why did this happen, but where do I go now? What do I do with my life now? And one thing that I find very interesting, and I delineate this in the book, is very quickly as you read Psalm 23, it's one of the most, some people say it's the greatest piece of literature ever written by the hand of man. In the first three chapters, David, the psalmist, talks about the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And he talks about him. But in verse 3, the psalm changes. And he says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And when he begins walking through the valley of the shadow of death, he no longer talks about the shepherd. He talks to the shepherd. And many times what we need to understand is that when we do walk through the valley of the shadow of death, which will happen, we need to understand that we can talk to the shepherd rather than just about him.
Thanks to Jim Mead for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.